Hey guys, as promised, the return of Jay Dyer of Esoteric Hollywood. Jay has done loads with us over the years, going back to the Jeffrey case. If you want to get deep into the secret societies, the symbolism, and these huge names, the rituals, please get your questions in now, folks. All of Jay's links are in the description box below this video. So please support his work. And before we get going, Jay, is there anything you would like to add about the research that you do and all the work you've done over the years?
No, that sounds great. You can find me at my website, jaysanalysis.com. And at least as of now, still hosting the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show every Friday. So you can find me there as well. So I'm ready to go.
All right. So I'll put Jay's links in the chat as well. So go down there if you're watching on YouTube. And we have got, he's on X, he's on YouTube, Instagram, and the website. So there's four separate links down there. All right. So Jay, since we last spoke, much has happened. It's just like there's just stories breaking every single day on Diddy. And then in the last week, we saw Jay-Z enter the mix. So let me just get your preliminary thoughts on what the hell's going on here. We had a professor come on the other night, Professor Hamamoto, and he said there's like a hostile takeover of rap going down by the powerful banking families. And these guys are just pawns on that chessboard. But what do you say to all of that?
I've always felt like rap was already controlled. So I don't know that why there would need to be a hostile takeover. I feel like, you know, from the earliest days, what we've seen so far is that a lot of what we were told was fake and gray, we'll say, all along. I mean, I kind of felt like when it was coming out, you know, in the 2000s that Dr. Dre, his origins weren't as, you know, hardcore and thug as we thought. He was in a very mediocre kind of pop band when it came out that NWA, except for maybe Eazy-E, was kind of a creation of the corporations. It wasn't really, you know, gang oriented. So I think gangster rap, you know, it's come out that there were those discussions in MTV back in the day with Sumner Redstone and others that they would create and kind of promote this genre for the West. It's really been controlled from the get-go. I'm not saying there weren't rappers or whoever that weren't legit or real, but I think the genre as a whole has been controlled, much like the rest of the music industry has been controlled by kind of a lot of organized crime figures. As you know, there are gangs, just like in prison, there's gangs for different people groups in the real world too. So there's Jewish gangsters, there's black gangs, there's black secret societies, the Boule Society, etc. There's societies for white people too, secret societies, Irish gangs. I mean, so there's gangs everywhere. There's organized crime. Organized crime has always been involved in the music industry. I don't think it's ever not been the case that it was controlled or taken over. Not saying there aren't good artists, but for me, man, this is just like vindication of everything that we in this domain have been talking about for so many years. And the reason so much is coming out, I think there's a lot of reasons why. Part of that has to do with the Trump administration. I have criticisms of Trump. I'm not saying that he's perfect, but there is at least the appearance or the discussion of people in, you know, government being prosecuted, people in music industry being prosecuted. So I think there really are people coming forward. There really are people getting busted. It may be at the mid-tier level and not the highest levels. Usually the highest level people don't get busted. But, you know, I was just watching some clips about Michael Jackson. And there's a lot of stuff going on in that background story, too. I know that there's allegations of him being connected to Diddy back in the day. But some of the stuff that Michael Jackson was saying about the moguls might have had a hand in his downfall as well.
Could you remember any of that stuff to say to the viewers?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of safe ways to say it on YouTube. I mean, he had that famous incident where he was singing about a certain people group. And they asked him to change the lyrics and he said he was going to. And then when he performed the song, he didn't do it. He still kind of made his anti, well, shall we say, Zionist comments. And that didn't go over well. And so that was a huge scandal for Michael Jackson back in the day. I remember when that was all over the news. I went back and watched a bunch of those news clips, and I'm just sort of like reframing and thinking, like, you know, I don't think Jacko was like a saint. I mean, he was kind of a weirdo, but you know, he might have also been onto some things.
Yeah, it's like when these guys start to get too big for their boots and demand rights back. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, we saw that with Diddy and Diageo, whereby they paid him $1 billion already, and he was suing them for racism. And I think he won that, and he was contributing to reputational damage to that company. But talking about deals, we analyzed the Diddy deals and they equaled X. We analyzed the Jay-Z deals and they equaled Y, which was a multiple of X.
Mm.
Net worth, $2.5 billion. NFL have come out and backed Jay-Z up. And it seems that Jay-Z's in a much bigger club than Diddy was in. And that the club, it appears to me, have rallied around Jay-Z. They're trying to destroy Busby, the lawyer. They're trying to destroy Jane Doe, who's made this allegation. How do you think that will play out? Will the club be able to protect Jay-Z, or is this process that's underway going to continue and maybe even more allegations will come out?
It's a good question, because we know, like we're saying, there are people that are above the level of the stars that are usually untouchable. So you kind of have these handler figures in the background. You go all the way back to Elvis, and, you know, Colonel Tom was his handler in the background, kind of, you know, stealing from him, ripping him off, all this kind of stuff. The artists are always subservient to these handler figures, usually some kind of music mogul. You know, like I said, Jacko was always calling out Tommy Mottola and other characters. Prince, you know, remember Prince had the same situation where Prince changed his name so that he could have control of some of the catalog, and then it wouldn't be controlled by the record companies. So, you know, a lot of these figures are always in the background, kind of unknown. We know about Clive Davis in the case of Diddy. Jay-Z, though, I think you're right. There's something unique about his situation where he seems to have graduated above the artist arena into kind of the higher sphere. And he may be untouchable. I don't know. I know that one sign we always see when it's a lot of these characters is that the ones that reach that higher level, they usually signify their status by a lot of the symbolism that they use. And of course, Jay-Z was one of the first artists, if you go back in the early 2000s, around the time of a lot of this controversy, he was signifying his allegiance to Aleister Crowley, you know, the famous Satanist of the last century, openly. You know, he first wore, of any artist I'm aware of, in this, at least in the rap sphere, was openly wearing a lot of Crowleyan gear, Crowleyan swag. You know, when he was doing this symbol, a lot of people don't know that's actually a symbol that comes out of the rituals of the Golden Dawn. So it's the triangle of manifestation. And so, you know, Jay-Z was always doing this for Hova and Rockefeller Records and all that. That was kind of his symbol. But it actually comes out of the rituals of the Golden Dawn and the Crowley Circle. So I think what I'm getting at is that if there's a symbolism sign that we could see about the untouchables, usually it involves being part of some kind of secret society network like we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of these pictures now and the symbolism there. But talking about symbolism then, Beyonce, what are your thoughts on Beyonce and her, you know, relationship with Jay-Z, partners in crime, etc., allegedly? What do you think?
You know, with a lot of these pop girls that come out of the, it's like they have this early period where they're very innocent. We saw that with Britney Spears. We saw that with Katy Perry. Katy Perry used to be a, quote, Christian musical artist. So you have this radical transformation. We saw it with Miley Cyrus. Ironically, Miley Cyrus even had a TV show where she had like a double life in, you know, Hannah Montana. So that might be telling us something. But a lot of the Disney stars came out of that genre of having a very innocent upbringing, and then they suddenly turn into like total whores, basically, in the public sphere. I think there's a reason for that. I think that the handlers, the people in the background, kind of, in a way, pimp out their stars. They make them go through these humiliation rituals. We've talked about that in the past. But I would say the same thing is there with Beyonce. What we see with Beyonce is, you know, she has an upbringing as a really very quiet church girl. She wasn't that, you know, interested in seeking the limelight. She liked to dance, we're told, in her background. But at some point along the way, when she got involved with Destiny's Child and then met Jay-Z and these people, there seems to have been a radical change in what happened to her. She became a different person. In fact, she describes herself, and again, I don't know how much of this is artistic license or just, you know, musicians and artists trying to reinvent themselves, but she had that period, if you remember, where she wasn't Beyonce anymore. She was Sasha Fierce, which she claimed was an alternate personality that had taken over her. Again, I don't know how real or just made up that is for marketing, but it could be the case that, you know, maybe there's a kind of a pimp handler relationship going on here. When she meets these people, her life drastically changes. But I think that it's, you know, the allegory that we hear about the selling your soul to the devil, I think it really relates more so to like these situations where if you want to get into these higher ranks, if you want to be in the $100 million, $1 billion category, a lot of times you've got to be willing to make your bones, so to speak. And that could be literal as well. A lot of people in these circles, as you got, as you know, we're dealing with billions of dollars here. We're dealing with lots and lots of money, fame, attention, a lot of deals. People end up dead around a lot of these people. And I don't think that that's accidental. It's not just organized crime. I think there's also elements of blackmail. So people need to be blackmailed before they can go up into the higher ranks to make sure that you're not going to rat on anybody. Because if you do, you go down too.
So you're talking about people getting compromised then. Would you include Justin Bieber in that category? Have been put through some kind of ritual?
It's looking like that's the case. I mean, I haven't followed Bieber closely. I've watched all the stuff relating to the old clips of Diddy with Bieber that are very, very suspicious. And you've got Crowley on the screen there. I mean, one of the things that Crowley talked about was, how can I put this? Dominating people from the backside, so shall we say, to make sure that they are subservient to the cult. We know that a lot of times people in that sphere talk about how, and I don't know what to believe about this, but they almost speak of it like it's not so much about the sexuality of it, but it's the humiliation shows the subservience, basically, that, you know, you're my bitch, so to speak. You're going to do what we want. And so if we tell you to do X, Y, Z in a sexual way, you're going to do it because we own you, you know. And think back to that famous statement of Diddy back in the day when he was on that TV show. I think it was that VH1 reality show he had about, you know, his interns and, you know, can you be an intern for Diddy or whatever? And one of the interns said, hey, you know, I've been out trying to find some of the hottest talent out there, blah, 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 blah. And Diddy said, stop. I don't want you finding talent. I want you finding people that are not talented that we can make into stars, because if they're not talented, we can control them all the more because they owe everything to us. People that are talented, they don't need us. They can go still be stars. So you want to find people that are not talented. And again, that's just the other component of this, is controlling them, especially in some kind of humiliating sexual way. I would not be surprised if they didn't do that or try that with Bieber. I don't know, obviously. But I mean, the way that Diddy acts with Bieber in all these clips is really weird.
Yeah, it's really creepy. So you've got tons of questions coming in, Jay. And this one is from Labwoo. If the likes of Diddy and Jay-Z go down, who are the others that will take their place?
It's a good question. I mean, the moguls will still be there. I think you could argue Jay-Z is kind of a mogul. You know, I mean, he's like you're saying, Sean, he's passed into that mogul category. But what I think we'd like to see is more of the mogul power structure go down. I mean, I think you start looking at who was super close to Jay-Z and Diddy throughout this last 20 plus years. I mean, we're talking J-Lo, we're talking Oprah, we're talking the Obamas. I mean, we're talking a huge portion of the, you know, Cuba Gooding Jr. people in Hollywood are very close to these people. A lot of other executives. So again, that doesn't necessarily mean they're all bad or guilty, but, you know, think about Oprah. You know, I think you could argue she covered up her close associations with the John of God cult, which was demonstrated to be a human trafficking, occult, you know, mind control operation, baby farming, all that was going on with John of God. That just disappeared. She scrubbed all that as best she could. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, look, you know, like attracts like. And so I hope to see more of the big people go down, but it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if they really will. Do they ever? It seems like a lot of times, and you could probably speak to this better than me, like a lot of times people that are running it kind of get off or they skate free and they go after the mid to low tier people. Those are the ones that take the rap.
Question from Adam. How sketchy is Tommy Mottola?
Well, I mean, if you believe all the stuff that, you know, Jacko says, they were really sketchy, just trying to rip him off. And the thing about Jacko that's really weird is that it actually gets into the occult stuff explicitly, because Michael Jackson, and maybe he was on drugs, maybe he was, you know, out of it when he said this, but do you guys remember when he was saying that Spielberg and others were putting spells on him and that they were doing voodoo, and that Jacko claimed he was going to do a counter spell against their spells? And people don't remember that. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Have you heard of that? Yeah. So, I mean, whether that's true or not, but it's like, that's what's going on in the mindset of the pop stars. And it came out about 10 years ago. One of Michael Jackson's kids actually drew a bunch of occult symbols and posted it on Twitter and said, you know, here's what's really going on. It was kind of mysterious, but it was like, you know, it was like a Golden Dawn hexagram. It was ritual magic type stuff. So there's definitely something like that going on at that sphere. And I just think that they're using these cults to control people. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tommy Mottola and all these people weren't involved in OTO, occult, secret society stuff.
So Melissa's wondering about your thoughts on Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, I mean, I've been aware of that, followed that since the days of Alex Jones, you know, going in there in 2000, 2001, whatever that was. I read a few books on it. I think that's the, you know, fake right-wing version of the establishment's traditional meeting place every year. It's kind of a right-wing Bilderberg group, same type of thing. A lot of the same people will go to both. It does have a loose occult fixation. If you go back to the origins of the Bilderberg or the Bohemian Club, they were into Druid philosophy. They would do druidic rites out in the forest. And then it kind of evolved into this big, you know, CEO GOP thing. You've got Reagan going there. You've got Nixon going there. They came up with a Star Wars defense program at Bohemian Grove when Reagan was there back in the 80s or late 70s, early 80s. So I think it matters. It's important. You could look at Helmut Schmidt, who was the former chancellor of Germany. I bought his book because I remember Alex talking about this and I didn't believe it. But if you buy Helmut Schmidt's book called Men in Powers, there's a section where he says, yes, I went to Bohemian Grove, and yes, we do the rituals there, and yes, it's all about, you know, controlling the world. And so, yeah, it's just one of the many elite, you know, soirees where they rumored to have, you know, shall we say, Skittles, rainbow stuff going on for the GOP.
Next question. Is Spielberg part of this whole thing? That's from Lisa Thompson.
Well, if you look at Whitney Webb's material, you know, she says that you've got this mega group, which is a really powerful group of, you know, Jewish and Israeli billionaires who are very interested in not just entertainment, but also influencing the political sphere. She makes a lot of connections between the mega group and, you know, some of the Jeff Stein McEffrey stuff, shall we say. So I wouldn't be surprised if he, I don't think he's like a controller, but I think he's definitely interested in some degree of influencing American pop culture. Obviously, he's had a huge role in promoting, for example, the alien UFO mythology, which I think it's a big psyop. So I think Spielberg played a key role in promoting a lot of that ideology. So I would say if the mega group information is true, that's probably the case.
So Sassy is asking, what documentaries would you recommend to learn about this topic?
That's a good question. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure of a good documentary just about Hollywood. Actually, I did a TV show. The best on this topic is my TV show that you can still watch at Gaia TV. We did a full production, full season of a TV show called Hollywood Decoded. And it's me together with a guy named Jay Wiedner. It's still available. You can find it online at Gaia.com. It is behind a paywall, but you can watch some of the episodes free. We basically just walk through about 23 of the top films of the last century that really show the hidden aspects of Hollywood symbolism, the cults, the stuff we're talking about today. Like we do a deep dive on Kubrick, Eyes Wide Shut, all these kind of classic films that show you what's really going on. So I would say watch my TV show.
After interviewing you last time, Jay, I had to go and rewatch Eyes Wide Shut. Scary.
Wild, huh? Yeah. I mean, I think that like that's what these music moguls are like. I think Diddy was like a mini version of that kind of stuff, you know, because Kubrick's talking about, I think, higher level, higher powered people above Diddy. But it's the same idea. It's like that they kind of do this same pattern of, oh, come to the big party. Oh, there's an orgy. If you want to come to the after party, then there's this, that. And then next thing you know, you've been videotaped and you're, you know, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Literally. And,
yeah. And, you know, you've done tons on Kubrick and Eyes Wide Shut. The theory that he was telling us and then he died because of that, is there anything to that?
Well, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to that. Vivian Kubrick messages me all the time. That's his daughter. We've had some good conversations. I keep trying to get her to do an interview, and she's really hesitant to do interviews, so she doesn't really want to speak on it. But I'm trying my best to get her to talk about it. But I just kind of was agnostic on that for a long time because I didn't know. But then it was interesting that I think Richard Avery, and I still have yet to listen to this recent Rogan podcast. Have you heard about this Rogan Tarantino podcast the other day?
No.
So actually they brought this up, right? So they're actually talking about this topic, and Avery was saying that he thinks there's something to it, I think. So I may have to reassess my agnosticism, and maybe there is something to it.
All right, so Nikki's wondering whether you've seen the more contemporary film, Blink Twice.
Yes, I thought it was a little on the woke side, but if you set aside the woke stuff, that's another one of these films that's pretty revelatory, where you have basically really, really wealthy billionaire people finding young girls, inviting them out to their island. I thought it was really odd that this was an island. I mean, it's almost like, you know, again, Jeff Stein McGeffrey code word there. Type stuff. He gets them out there. He drugs them. They're using mind control techniques. They're basically, it's like an extreme form of roofie. I forget what it's, some kind of hallucinogen that makes you forget, you know. And then even what was interesting about the film, spoiler alert, was even at the end, like the main guy, the Channing Tatum or whoever it was, he himself seems to have been kind of abused and mind controlled because he sort of had these different personas going on. And it almost been raised to be this way. So I think there is this generational component to where, you know, think about Ghislaine, you know, she's taught all this stuff by Robert, her dad, who was a Cold War era compromiser and intelligence operative, et cetera. So I think this is generationally passed down. And that film shows
up. Yeah, I'll just add a bit to that. So I'm glad that that film came out. And I think perhaps it had to be woke to get past the gatekeepers.
Yeah. Good point.
But in reality, that film would have ended with those young ladies getting chopped up and fed to the fish.
Oh yeah.
That's my perspective.
Good point. Yeah.
All right. So Peacock, is there a hierarchy of black magic in Hollywood?
To a degree, yeah. I mean, if you go back to the earliest days of Hollywood, like when you had the first big, well, this is more German film, but like Fritz Lang was putting heavy satanic stuff in his films. This is public. This is like academia. This isn't conspiracy theory. Fritz Lang was putting all kinds of satanic symbolism in his films. I'm actually writing my third book, Esoteric Hollywood 3, on this topic right now. So there's been a long time association of Hollywood with the satanic and the occult. If you go back to the Elizabeth Smart case, where she was ritually dismembered and murdered in the Black Dahlia case, that's another direct tie-in to a lot of high-level Hollywood figures. In fact, for a while, Orson Welles was a suspect in the Black Dahlia case because George Hodel was so close to people like John Huston. Huston has oftentimes been associated with this case. So even Edward G. Robinson, the famous actor, was associated with those circles too. So I think this has always appealed to people in film, artists, creative types. They're sort of drawn to these fringe aberrant religious movements a lot of times because they think they'll get maybe inspiration, they'll get networking capabilities through these secret societies. And I think what's really going on most of the time is that a lot of these cults are run by really cunning, deceptive people who are controlling people. They're not really, I mean, there is a sense in which you can go up the ladder and get power through the cults, but you're also becoming their bitch, like we said earlier. So yeah, I think there is this hierarchy of secret societies and cults, but it's a super tight control system more so than it is like real magic.
All right, we've got well over 3,000 watching live. I'm putting Jay's YouTube channel link in the live chat. So people, please support his important work. All of these other links are in the description box. Thank you for all the questions coming in. There's tons of them. I'll try and get through as many as possible. Felicia, what does Jay think of the movies that Zoe Kravitz, Lenny's daughter, produced? Do you know which one that is?
Didn't she produce Blink Twice? Was that what I'm thinking of?
Or was it? We already covered that then. All right, let's go over to Hells. Are these movies that show the symbolism all deep state, or are some from the light side trying to show us what's really going on? We would hope so. There'd be some would get.
Yeah, I don't think it's either or. I think there's a, you know, you're dealing with hundreds of people, thousands of people sometimes that go into the making of a movie. So I think that usually what you find with the high level propaganda or the, you know, mind control is like the big blockbusters usually have the most propaganda. They're the ones that are usually trying to deflect and, you know, make some other country the bad guy if it's a Bond movie or something like that, or they'll, you know, try to get the message out, but then it gets skewed and it's reversed as to who's really behind it. So there's a mix of things going on. A lot of independent films might be better nowadays for actually telling us what's going on rather than the blockbuster studio films. But again, the studio system is dying, so that's going away. That's legacy. It's all transitioning over into like streaming services and Apple Studios and Amazon Studios. So I don't think it's getting any better per se, but I think actually people are getting tired of just all of the Hollywood degeneracy and the nonsense. And maybe this will open it up to where a lot more independent filmmakers can be successful. This seems to be already happening. So no, but I don't think they're all bad. No.
Question from GMC Films. Ask Jay about the process church of the final judgment and the wearing of the black capes.
Yeah, the process church is interesting because they were started in the UK, if I recall. Their origins relate to people closely associated with British intelligence in the UK. They pop up through the figure of, at least in America, the most relevant is the case is Robert de Grimston, who was a former Roman Catholic priest who became a member of the process church. And this is the link to Manson. So Manson gets involved in the process church through this, finds their weird philosophy, theology to be very influential. It's a very Gnostic dualist philosophy. This inspires Helter Skelter, where he comes with this idea of like a future apocalyptic race war. Nowadays, I think they still exist, but they've rebranded as some kind of animal rights thing, which is really weird. But if you go back to the Process Church magazine, what's the most fascinating about that is that when that was out in the 70s and 80s, they were publishing articles by Jimmy Savile. There's an article in there by Mick Jagger. So I think Manson even contributed at one point or was on the cover of Process Church. So you start to notice like a lot of the figures that you might expect that are all kind of connected are all working through this front organization, which is really a mind control operation. And I think that suggests, as Tom O'Neill and others have pointed out in their books, that, you know, Manson's not just a random organic guy. He seems to have had some very clear MK Ultra type associations.
Abundantly Empowered is asking, what are your thoughts, Jay, on the CIA connection to Hollywood? Has Hollywood always been a psyop?
Well, even before the existence of the CIA and before the OSS, and I actually wrote some chapters on this in my previous books, you know, there's always been a close connection between military intelligence and filmmaking. The earliest films that were big blockbusters, like in the days of Howard Hughes, things like Hell's Angels, those were military intelligence propaganda war films. People don't know that Alfred Hitchcock worked closely with both the Office of Wartime Intelligence and British Intelligence to produce propaganda films for British intelligence. So even the biggest directors, you can go back to Daryl Zanuck. He worked together with the OSS to make certain films that would promote Western intelligence objectives. So absolutely. And then it only, as those entities rebrand, you go from the OSS to the CIA, it only gets closer and closer of an intimate connection. I mean, under the period of Ronald Reagan, Reagan was actually just allocating government money to Hollywood to churn out just nonstop kind of propaganda films for all branches of the military. Top Gun, classic example of that. So absolutely, it's always been flip sides of the same coin. And by the way, this is why so many of the top A-list actors and actresses have, in countless cases, been famous spies. They're recruited to be intelligence operatives, whether it's Julia Child or whether it's Jimmy Stewart. You know, he worked for the FBI. Julia Child worked for the OSS. Even Audrey Hepburn, like, she did counterintelligence stuff for the, you know, anti-Nazi networks for the UN, the United Nations. So, I mean, so she did peacekeeping anti-Nazi stuff. Maybe it wasn't the UN, but it was some kind of NGO that she was working for. I mean, most of these Marilyn Monroe had a Department of Defense badge, and she had access to all these like government places. I mean, so it's like it never ceases to amaze me, like, how many of these actors and actresses have worked for intelligence. And by the way, I think you can look at people like Ben Affleck and people like that who almost kind of admit that they do. You know, he's like, oh yeah, of course, you know, we consult with the CIA to make movies like Argo. I mean, I think some of those people are actually just literally work for the CIA.
And you're getting asked about MK Ultra, the Manson family, Sharon Tate. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I believe that thesis loosely for a long time. I read some books maybe 10, 15 years ago that speculated about the relationship between Manson and MKUltra. That seems to be vindicated through the more recent work of Tom O'Neill and the Chaos book. I think that that's true. It seems like when Manson was in prison, he also, you know, went through all the levels of Scientology to achieve Theta Clear. To me, that just screams like brainwashing, mind control. I think that's what Scientology is, kind of a brainwashing thing. So exactly how it all worked out, I don't know, but there's definitely a lot of people around in the orbit of Manson who have these organized crime and intelligence connections. Jay Sebring, Bobby Beausoleil, you know, the Process Church, British Intelligence. Yeah, I think Manson was probably a kind of MKUltra subject, if not totally a mind-controlled pawn. But exactly how it all went down, I don't know. I don't know if he was literally handled to tell people to go murder people or how it went down, but I do think that it's fishy for sure.
Madame Papillon, does Jay have any thoughts on the film Rosemary's Baby and its supposed links to Sharon Tate?
Yeah, I mean, the same book that I'm talking about, like, there were people writing about this 10, 15 years ago, talking about the alleged association between Anton LaVey and the film, which I think has been debunked. I think Anton LaVey wasn't involved in the production of the film. But this would more so relate to the circles of Roman Polanski, because Roman Polanski was, obviously, he was, you know, married to Sharon Tate, but I'm not alleging that he caused it or was behind it, but There have been books written that talked about the involvement in various occult activities that were going on with Angelica Houston and other people in those circles when they were having these parties where supposedly the underage stuff happened that resulted in Polanski leaving the country and living in, I think, Poland or wherever he lives. So that to me suggests that, yeah, there are secret society occult things going on with Polanski, at least, and with the circles of the Mansons and the Tates. So I wouldn't be surprised if she wasn't some kind of occult sacrifice.
All right, next question then is, what is the process of going through MKUltra?
Well, MKUltra was a series of dozens and dozens of different projects. So that's kind of a loose term that's used for all of these. But in reality, MKUltra was done at dozens of universities. It was done at military bases. It was done at psychiatric institutions, hospitals. It was like a broad, vast research operation that involved everything from LSD to sleep studies. In fact, most people don't know that a lot of MKUltra research was being done in Australia, and a lot of the famous doctors out of the Australian system that were studying schizophrenia. There's a serial killer, one of the most famous serial killers in Australia. His name is Harry something, but he was in charge of a giant sleep studies clinic. And what he was doing was putting people to the point of death and then bringing them back immediately as part of his, but that turned out to be part of MKUltra. So, I mean, MKUltra is very broad, very vast. And so even the Theodore Kaczynski, he, when he was at Harvard, he actually signed up to be part of MKUltra explicitly. I think probably because he thought he would just get free drugs. So that's the sense I get. I don't think he knew he was what he was getting into, but it was like, oh man, they're giving out free drugs, dude. Yeah, let's do it. But he ended up part of MKUltra. In fact, Whitey Bulger was part of MKUltra. He was being given LSD, I think, in prison, if I recall. So it's very broad, very vast.
Annabelle's asking your thoughts on the 1927 movie Metropolis.
Yeah, I included that in my second book. I think it's the last chapter in my second book because there's a lot of weird socialist esoteric stuff going on in there. I think Fritz Lang, if I recall, was an explicitly a socialist. And so the point of that book, of that movie, is to demonstrate that we can have a future technocracy, but we're going to have to be careful because you can't let the classes have class war. So they have to, in some way, function in a synergy. That's the point of the movie at the end. But what's most interesting about the movie is that it came out in the 1920s, and you have this idea of the creation of AI and SEX bots in a 1920s film. And that's where we're right now, like 100 years later, at the point where they're beginning to roll this out. So I think it's a very prophetic film. And that's what I highlighted in my chapter on it.
Yeah, I've just started to watch this movie, Sub something, about this robot.
Oh, the Megan Fox one?
We just
watched that. So yeah, you'll see what it's kind of it's like an updated version of Metropolis, exactly.
And there was what, Deus Ex Machina, am I pronouncing it correct? That one as well.
Oh, Ex Machina. That was actually a really good movie. Yeah, we covered that
too. Yeah. All right, so Sarai Gonzalez, does the current status of Hollywood and how it operates reflect the founders of Hollywood? Did they design it to be this way? Exploitative and controlling?
To a degree, yes. I mean, I don't know that they knew what it would become, but the earliest days of Hollywood and then the vaudeville and then the studio systems, like when the studio system comes about, if I recall, this is from mainline academia, this is not my theory, but if I recall, I mean, it's pretty much all but one, like four or five of the major studios. The heads of them were all members of they were all Freemasons, very active Freemasons. So I think that from the earliest days, they wanted to lock down that system and control it. And even the one studio that wasn't, which I think was RKO, well, that was like Rockefeller. So that you have like studio systems owned by a certain people group, shall we say, from the Middle East. And then you have one studio that's like owned by the moguls of America. So it's yes, I would say it's always been intentionally. It doesn't mean everybody's bad. It doesn't mean all the movies are bad. It just means that overall the system was there as a massive propaganda engine for sure.
Question from Todor about the Tavistock Institute, alleged to have a task to suffocate cultural optimism of post-war 50s and 60s. What are your thoughts on the Tavistock Institute?
I've gone pretty deep into Tavistock. In fact, I just recently got one of their official histories from a guy, H.V. Dix, who was a member of the Tavistock Institute. And the official history written in the 1960s or 70s actually basically admits a lot of this. So we've had people in the conspiracy sphere writing for a long time about the role of Tavistock, Dr. John Coleman, Daniel Estulin. So a lot of people have talked about it for a long time. And in fact, it was pretty clear that they were very open in the last 10 years that Tavistock was at the tip of the spear pushing the TRANS agenda for the last 10 years. They've admitted this, and they supposedly were shutting down the clinic because there was so much backlash against it. I would not be surprised if they weren't involved in every aspect of social engineering, including how did you word it? Shutting down optimism or something like that. Yeah, I think they've been the premier brainwashing institute for the last 100 years, I think. I mean, and you have people like all the people from the Frankfurt School. You've got Carl Jung. You've got everybody who's anybody working with Tavistock over the years.
All right, guys, we've got 20 minutes left with Jay. Get your questions in before Big Homie comes in. And Jay's links are all in the...
Am I not Big Homie?
he's six foot eight, I think.
Okay, he's bigger than me. He wins.
Yeah,
he's the bigger homie. Okay.
Pam, is there anybody in Hollywood who hasn't sold their soul to the devil? And why do they thank God at the award ceremonies when they worship the devil? It's an inversion, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, they could mean their God, right? They could mean the devil. They could mean anything. Also, they could do it just for public purview, right? Because most people in America are not open Satanists. So they might just be doing it to look good and like, okay, so the Americans believe in God or whatever. So I'll say, thank you, God. So maybe just for looks and PR, but yeah, I would imagine there's plenty of people who aren't totally sold out or who, you know, are naive or who, you know, have good intentions. I mean, again, the old legacy system's going away. So I think that'll be less and less relevant. I've done a lot of interviews with Jamie Kennedy, the comedian and the guy from, you know, Malibu's Most Wanted, Scream. We've done a lot of live shows and stand up and podcasts together. And he's very candid in his podcast and the interviews we've done. He's like, Hollywood's dead. He's like, I'm still here. I still work in it, but this old legacy system's dying and going away. I don't think Jamie sold his soul. He's very open. He's anti-New World Order. He's a very honest, cool guy. So he's one example. I think there's plenty of other people too. I'm sure I've met some comedians and stand-ups that are pretty well known, and I don't think they're sellouts or bad guys. I think typically the most sold out would be like we're talking about earlier, like when you get to that certain like $100 million, $1 billion level, that's where you're kind of required and expected to sell out, I think.
Murray wants your most recent favorite book title.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now on the history of British espionage in terms of the turn of the last century. It's called Black Gold Spies. And it's about how the British Empire was really mainly concerned with locking down control of oil. They didn't actually end up getting that. It ended up being America and the Rockefellers that really won that. But it's an insight into how the British power structure worked, the Royal Society, how it worked. At the turn of the last century. So it's highlighting people like T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. If you've never seen that movie, it's kind of about that. So that's a really good book. I recommend that to anybody who's interested. And the reason that matters, you're like, well, that's 120 years ago. Who cares? Well, the way the system operates, it's the same. So if you go back to the great game of what Russia and the West were doing 100 plus years ago, it's the same stuff that's happening right now. So like history just repeats. That's why it matters.
Same stuff, but with high tech.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of people are asking about a lot of different names and a lot of different questions about people getting dragged into the Jay-Z Diddy thing. And I'll give you some of the names. Naomi Campbell, Mary J. Blige, LeBron, J-Lo, Beyonce. You know, do you think there could be some kind of domino effect with these other people?
I wouldn't be surprised. I would think that the way all of those groups work is like a kind of network and secret society structure, even if they're not all literally in the same secret society. We know that, for example, Boule Society is a great example of like a high level, prominent black secret society or fraternity, so to speak. I actually believe a lot of fraternities are just kind of watered down secret societies. Or maybe even actual full-on secret societies, kind of like Skull and Bones. You know, Skull and Bones is a great example of, you know, Yale, Harvard, people, whatever. They're, I know it's from Yale, but people out of that power structure, the WASP power structure, that's how they're recruited into the OSS and the CEO structure. And I think you have these same type of things for other people groups like black secret societies, black networks that recruit. So they're going to operate the same way as Skull and Bones and those things work. It's just for other people groups. So that being the case, I would not be surprised if J-Lo and all these Naomi Campbell. Wasn't Naomi Campbell close to Epstein?
She's everywhere. She's with Diddy, Weinstein, all of them.
Yeah. Okay. So I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know any specifics, but yeah.
So Susan is saying, if Hollywood is dead, what will replace it?
Right now, it's just shifting to the internet and the, you know, studio systems of Amazon, Apple. Forget the other one. I guess Netflix has their own studios. So, I mean, it's just internet now. But, I mean, it's the same ethos. It's not fundamentally different in terms of its morals and the propaganda. In fact, it's probably worse now because it seems like the kind of messaging that we get from Netflix, you know, over the last few years has been even worse than what Hollywood's able to put out. So it'll go to that. But I mean, I don't know, maybe those things are the people. And I think Netflix has been, stock has been going down over the last several years with their scandals. Disney has been tanking through their scandals with all the degeneracy that they push. So I hopefully people will continue to not support these mega entities that are mind controlling everybody.
What are your thoughts on the movie Wizard of Oz and Wicked and the people who wrote the stories?
I've looked into Frank Baum. I think he's an interesting character because he was a theosophist. So he was involved in the occult, kind of a, you know, weird secret society kind of dude. And he did pack a lot of theosophical meanings into the Oz series. If you look at something like Return to Oz, we did a whole podcast breakdown on that film, which is a really weird Disney film from the 1980s. And, you know, there's a lot of mind control, MKUltra stuff going on in that film. But I would say that overall, I think the ethos is very similar to the patterns of the stories that you see in Through the Looking Glass. I've done big breakdowns of that book by Lewis Carroll. And there's a lot of mind control, alternate MPDDID stuff going on explicitly in Lewis Carroll's books. I think it's the same stuff going on with Oz. So they become really good structures and patterns for people who are into mind control. In fact, I think Dr. Ewan Cameron in John Marks's book on MKUltra, it was either Wizard of Oz or Lewis Carroll's Looking Glass that he used as his pattern supposedly for trying to restructure a person's personality. So they literally did at one point use these stories as models of how to try to create different personalities in people. Whether they were super successful with that, I don't know. We're not, a lot of the MKUltra research was destroyed, so we don't know how successful it was, but yeah, I think there is I don't know that Frank Baum intended it to be an MKUltra thing. He didn't know about that. But people were realizing a long time ago, even ancient Egypt, they seemed to realize that you could hypnotize people. People had perhaps multiple personalities in the ancient world, possession type stuff. So I think that as we get closer to the modern era, people were just kind of putting these ideas into their stories. And then they become templates for later intellectuals or mind control mad scientists to try to say, oh, let's try to use this as a manual.
Susan wants to know if you think the film L.A. Confidential is a good reflection of early Hollywood corruption and debauchery.
Oh, yeah. I love L.A. Confidential. In fact, that's one of my favorite neo-noir films. We did a podcast on that a few years ago. You do get some interesting insights into, because that film is about, you know, the police being corrupt, kind of working with drug prostitution rings. Hollywood being involved. So yeah, it's a great insight into exactly what we're talking about today, that Hollywood's really never been any different. Music industry is the same way. Never been any different. Absolutely.
What do you make of all these drone videos that are coming out over America?
I think it's some kind of deep state psyop. I don't exactly know what the point is. It might be to undermine Trump. It might be to, you know, it might be to lay the groundwork to say that we're being drone attacked by Iran or Russia to then have a false justification for war, troops on the ground in Iran, troops, you know, American troops in the Ukraine. I mean, it could be a justification for that. But I don't believe that there's anything alien involved in it. I'm a big supporter of the thesis that the alien stuff is a giant psyop. If you just watch a documentary like Mirage Man, it's really good for that.
Is there any drones over your state?
No, not so far. I mean, All I've heard about so far is Colorado, California, New Jersey. But it seems to be kind of like every day there's like a new story of drones, these crazy drones popping up. So in maybe in the next couple of days, or maybe today we'll get one. I don't know.
Speaking of the skies, Shrine is asking for your thoughts on flight MH17.
Malaysian stuff. I remember following that at the time. I don't have anything conclusive on it. I don't believe it was like mystical warp technology that made it warp to some other place. I don't know what it is.
Becky, I've heard a lot of stars that are of the dark. What about Keanu Reeves? He seems light, but Johnny Depp seems dark.
It does seem like, you know, Keanu's energy is a positive, nice guy, at least as far as I can tell. I don't know anything about him. But I know that Johnny Depp at one time did state that he was involved in the occult explicitly. He did say about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, he said that he was involved in chaos magic, which is a real thing. It's a real magic tradition. So, you know, maybe he learned the hard way that's not a good practice. I don't know. But yeah, I think usually you can kind of get a good sense of people. And sometimes people can be super psychopathic and fool you and they seem really nice, but they're like the most dastardly people. That happens sometimes, but probably that thesis is right.
So is Tom Cruise involved at the top level? He's involved at the top level of Scientology, isn't he?
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise is one of these people that we're talking about, like, that seems to be kind of at a high, like, I mean, I don't know. I can't prove, this is my opinion. People like Ben Affleck, people like Matt Damon, George Clooney, they have a history of explicitly working with the CIA in a very open way, and perhaps even being CIA themselves. In fact, I always play that, it's either Guardian or Telegraph in an interview from 10 years ago where Ben Affleck literally says, you can do the interview still on YouTube, you can pull it up. He says, look, Hollywood and the CIA are flip sides of the same coin. A bunch of people in Hollywood work for the CIA and vice versa. And if you go to the CIA page on Instagram and you look at who follows it, it's literally all the people that you would think, like, that are in CIA TV shows. So it's Claire Danes and it's like Tom Cruise, or I can't remember if Tom Cruise is on there, but point being, I would not be surprised if there isn't like a, you know, Tom Cruise working with CIA type stuff.
Gemini's asking whether you ever get threats on your life for speaking out.
I mean, I think everybody who gets to a certain level of, like, you know, if you're over 100,000 on YouTube or something, you're going to eventually start getting people saying crazy stuff and, you know, threatening you. And so I've had some like comments that, you know, I'm gonna come kill you or something like that, but nothing's ever happened. I mean, I live in two states where you can always have a gun very easily, and I always do have a gun, so I'm not too worried about that. But no, I mean, the type of research that I do usually just deals with stuff that's already in the public domain, so I don't ever have, like, you know, I'm gonna drop the secret information that's gonna, you know, bring down Bill Clinton in 2 weeks. Which, that's like the best way to, like, I mean, they're going to kill you in the next 2 weeks. It's really stupid. So no, I don't ever work with anything that's not, you know, in the public domain. So not really.
Do you think the Hollywood sign will get knocked down like the Berlin Wall?
maybe if they, if California and Los Angeles continue with their socialist policies, they won't even have to knock it down. Everything will just degrade and it'll fall down, because, I mean, it wasn't as bad as I expected it to be, but we were in LA maybe 8 months ago, and I mean, it's looking rough. I mean, there's still some nice areas, but I just think that when your cities turn super blue socialist and they're run by these just insane Democrat leaders, I'm not saying the GOP is that much better, but the Democrats just seem to be really good at, like, wrecking stuff. So I wouldn't give LA much longer before it just collapses. Maybe 10, 15 years.
Is this the end of MK Ultra and deep state control?
No, I don't think it's the end. I think they're going to definitely pull every trick out of the hat that they can. I mean, I don't know how this drone stuff relates to it, but I sense that this is the next thing. I don't know where it's going, but I think that, that's another trick they're going to pull. They might try to pull another PAN dimmick. No, they're not going away. MKUltra, it never ended even when they had the hearings. They just renamed it MK Search and MK Delta, and they went into other areas. So those became research into brain chips and biometrics and biological warfare. So all they had to do was rename it and then classify it as national security. So no, it's never going away.
Georgina, what does Jay think is the solution? How do we radically overhaul this endemic perversion?
I do think that the information continuing to get out is damaging them. I mean, even when I first came on your podcast a few years ago, Sean, like I wouldn't have expected things to go where they have gone. So a lot of positives have been happening. And we were talking 4 or 5 years ago, like we got to get the word out, this kind of stuff. And even I was kind of skeptical whether we would actually be able to get the word out, but it's, it does seem like, you know, whatever you think of Elon and Twitter, like it does seem like a lot of good information is getting out. It's not perfect. It's not everything that we'd like to see getting out, but it's, you know, Twitter is becoming the main hub of where people get information out now, in terms of the news format, not so much video. Video is still YouTube, but I think there's positives, and I think that as long as we keep pushing this stuff out, like people are figuring it out. Maybe not quick enough as we'd like, but do you agree? What do you think? You've seen, your channel's only, you're almost at 1 million now, man. That's great.
I see AJ getting up to 10 million in his lives on X. I've never seen anyone get that many on lives.
Yeah, we had a fourth hour about a month ago that I did the fourth hour, and that I was happy because that was the stream where Alex got 32 million. So my fourth hour got seen about 32 million on that stream. So yeah,
you guys have got me setting world records over the.
Well, more so Alex. It's not me, but yeah, Alex is.
Do you think Amber Heard is involved in this craziness? It feels like she is.
Yeah, my tendency, I don't have any proof, but my tendency is to think that a lot of the girls in pop music in Hollywood, they're kind of shuffled over into the witchcraft path, right? So the guys are, I guess they're put into Crowley butt rituals, and then girls are shuffled over into witchcraft, and that's not far-fetched. I mean, we've seen a lot of high-level Hollywood women and music industry women talk about being into witchcraft. In fact, some years back, Katy Perry talked about being inducted into witchcraft, maybe 5 years ago. She did a whole Instagram post about it. I would not be surprised if Amber Heard wasn't introduced into some circles of Wicca and witchcraft through Hollywood and the elite of Hollywood, the women elite. And what's her name? Hermione from Harry Potter. I forget her name. Emma Watson, is that her name?
I can't remember.
You know what I'm talking about, Hermione from Harry Potter. She's a famous British actress. Yeah. I forget her name. Emma Watson. She was also inducted into witchcraft, according to her public Instagram posts, maybe 2 years ago. So I think that's what's going on with a lot of Hollywood women. I wouldn't be surprised if Amber Heard's not a witch.
Jean is asking, does Jay believe soccer viewers and people in stadiums can get MK altered? Doesn't this go back to ancient Rome? We'll give them games to watch and hypnotize them.
They're probably talking about, yeah, like when we see the sportscasters and they like glitch out or whatever. I don't know what that is. I mean, a lot of people in media and entertainment take pills, and so they could be like, you know, pilled out. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we don't know what kind of signals and ELF, BLF they're using. They do have, even in the 1970s, Brzezinski wrote in his book, Between Two Ages, that ELF, VLF signals can be used to agitate large masses of people, including entire nations and continents. So maybe, but I think more so rather than the really sensationalist stuff, just bread and circuses itself is kind of distraction and mind control.
Was Hollywood designed with the idea in mind to team up with politicians and the government?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why some of the first stuff that was recorded on cameras was propaganda. And so, I don't mean the first actual videos of the train or the man running or whatever, the most famous first footage, but like when it became a technology you had Germany immediately leaped on it. You had the U.S. immediately leaped on it. Immediately in Russia, you had people doing propaganda. So the military especially immediately saw the propaganda effects of film, and they jumped on it right away. So absolutely.
A few people in the chat are asking, in your studies of the occult, etc., have you ever come across the use of tunnels?
Yeah, I mean, in one sense, I can think of, so the Hellfire Club, they would famously meet in areas of London underground, and they felt like, I'm guessing that, for one, it was just a way to be secret, but perhaps there was also an association with the underworld being in tunnels and so forth. The McMartin preschool case, when the FBI declassified that, they admitted that there were tunnels underneath the preschool. So that lends credence to the theory of Ted Gunderson. So yeah, there could be an occult connection. There could be a human trafficking connection. And you can look up old Rand Corporation papers where they did talk about in the 1960s or 70s, how to build vast underground tunnel networks in the U.S. Whether they actually did that on a large scale and where, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. So we got, is there a hierarchy of black magic in Hollywood?
Probably. I don't know who the top of it would be, but there are many famous producers and directors that do talk about being in the into Kabbalah very heavily. They do talk about being into ritual magic. They make movies about it. Just a couple examples. I don't know. Again, I don't know if these people are at the top, but Darren Aronofsky, many of his movies are about Kabbalah. So I would imagine he's into Kabbalah. Very famous director, made a lot of really big films. James Franco reenacted a entire Crowley ritual about 5 or 6 years ago. So he's probably interested in that to some degree or part of it. If you read a book like Blood on the Altar, Chaim Bickner goes through a lot of Hollywood people who were involved in the OTO back in the day. So yeah, I don't know who's running it. I don't know who the queen witch is, but maybe Madonna. Madonna's like, you know, long time high level Kabbalist. She's probably a high level witch.
Jay, honestly, man, you get all these questions thrown at you and you've got answers for, you've done so much research. You like know something about every subject that's been raised every time. It's incredible. So thank I really you. Appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers before Big Homie comes on?
No, thanks again for having me, Sean. It's always great coming on. I love it. You do a great show. If you're interested in these topics specifically, like we've been talking about today, I have two books that cover the subject. If you're looking for a weird, wacky Christmas present for your friends and family, if they like this rabbit hole, I've got Esoteric Hollywood 1 and 2, and you can get signed copies at my website. If you buy from Jeff Bezos, you don't get a signed copy. If you get it from my website, jaysanalysis.com in the shop, every copy is signed, and so I will personalize it for you. And it makes for a great, fun, wacky Christmas present. Thank you so much, Sean.
They want you to narrate them in your distinct voice, Jay.
Do what?
They want you to narrate those books in your very distinct voice.
Oh, like an audio? I've never done audio. Yeah. Maybe I should.
Yeah, get on it.
Or do the whole thing in Nick Cage voice or something weird like that.
All right, cheers, brother. I'll close the show, let you go. All right, thanks, man. Cheers.
Thanks, Sean. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. What a fantastic guy. He's been a friend of the channel for years. Big Homie is now, the show has started. I'm going to end this one and it will transfer you over. If it doesn't, click on the channel icon and that will take you over. Tomorrow, we've got Hollywood Butler exposing Tom Hanks, Marlon Brando, you name it. He was Clint Eastwood's butler. Wednesday, Jaguarite. Thursday, Charlie Robinson. Friday, I think Jaguarite's back. We're going all week, folks. Hours and hours of content. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for your questions. Get ready for Big Homie. Jay's links are in the description.